Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Wait a minute, Bree. You're what? In charge of this episode. Do the intro.
What? What? No. Fuck. No.
I was confused as hell.
Bree, do the intro.
Even Jacob's like, what?
We're live. What? Do the intro.
Oh my gosh. What? What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your co-host, and right now, at this moment, the host, Bree Reiner. Way to put me on the spot there, Joe.
Yeah, I told you to throw curveballs today.
Joe and Aki and Jacob's here. How's everybody doing?
Good. How are you?
Feeling fat and sassy.
Oh, I think right now I'm doing a little better than you at the moment.
I just got done eating a bunch of soy garlic fried chicken, and it was amazing.
That sounds good. I had pizza.
I haven't eaten yet today.
I didn't eat yet.
My dinner was better.
I tried to get Subway, but it was cold, and I just couldn't. Ugh.
What the fuck? Yeah, cold like half of half of their menu is cold.
Not when you order a hot sandwich.
Why would you order a hot sandwich?
Is this what I wanted?
Oh my gosh,
steak, egg, and cheese. Right. Come on, man.
It's not
breakfast. Always get the meatball subs. So
when did
all
I
right,
say
well, now that we're all hungry, we also have like guests with us.
See how fun this is, Bree? Trying to
It's super fun. I almost forgot that I was supposed to do that. We have Evan from eCourse, who made a little game called Chroma Zero, joining us today. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm good. I'm well fed, and it's good to be here.
Train wreck intro. Ooh.
First question.
Go ahead, Jacob.
Do you already regret being on the show?
Yes.
You know, I didn't have any soy garlic chicken, so I'm a little jealous, but I can handle it. So, you know, all in all, pretty good.
So,
follow-up question: why not?
why no soy garlic chicken for me? Is that what you're asking?
No. Why don't you regret being on the show yet?
Still early, Jacob. We gotta warm them up.
We gotta ease them in. Right.
It's good. Yeah.
So the reason for the odd intro today is because Evan is here to talk about his game Chroma Zero, and it is the game that Bree has been obsessed with. And
yep.
Bree, you are basically going to lead this interview, but I'll kick things off for you. Evan, for the people who don't know what Chroma Zero is, give us the sales pitch.
Sure. Chroma Zero the genre is called a Metroidvania, which I love, but some people don't like the term. But what that genre is all about is a game of epiphanies, a game of uncovering secrets that are related to other secrets, and a game where exploration is really key to learning more about the world, and then that knowledge helps you get even further. The types of games that are in the genre are things like Outer Wilds, some games that you might not have heard of, like Leap Year is like a platformer that's also a Metroidvania. Tunic is like a combat Dark Souls Zelda Metroidvania. So it's kind of like that.
I do like the term Metroidvania. I like that.
Yeah, it's actually one of my questions that I wanted to ask about is was that a term you coined or did that come from somewhere? Like.
So it originated, I think, on some blog post, somebody doing an analysis of some of the games that use these tools pretty heavily, like Fez and The Witness.
Good, yeah.
I don't want to spoil those, you know, games with those epiphanies, but there's, you know, twists and turns and sort of aha moments that are really satisfying in those games, and I think somebody coined the term off of, you know, the Metroidvania portmanteau. So
yeah, I kind of like it in relation to Chroma Zero. I think it's a good term. It's kind of like Torcore for simulation games about mundane tasks like power washing or lawn mowing.
I still love that term so much.
Yeah, I didn't come up with it, but Joe gives me credit for it.
Yeah, Bree came up with it all by herself.
That's great.
I think it's something I read somewhere too, yeah. But it's kind of what I did while I was playing Chroma Zero was I would like do the dishes. I'd play for a little while and then I would go wander the garden and then I'd be thinking about it in the background. So I kind of like that term, you know, for that having to go back and forth with the new knowledge. Really my first question that I wanted to ask, now that I've already asked another question ahead of it, is what on earth possessed you to make this game? Did you have a fever dream? Were you just out of your mind when you came up with the concept? I mean, really though, like it's cleverly complex and somehow simple at the same time, and I adore it. So what brought you to make this game?
Well, the short answer is I was trying to make a different game, and that was too big and too hard and too challenging for my like first try at this. So yeah, literally in the shower, I was like, well, what if I just had a space with like three kind of nested, you know, rotating square things? That's probably good enough for like a game I could, you know, build in a month. And all right. So I started, tried to build it out, got a month in, wasn't done, but I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I'll give it another month and, you know, so on and so forth. So, mechanically though, I guess I was inspired by an older game called Antichamber.
Which is totally on my wish list on Steam, and I've never gotten to play it. Tell me more about that connection.
So do for sure. That's Alexander Bruce is Australian. Handle is Demruth online, and he is a solo developer. He built it all over the course of several years. And so when I was thinking about my scoping problem of the bigger game I wanted to make, I thought a lot about that. I was like, well, he spent years of his own life building, you know, what I know as Antichamber, and it's big. I mean, it's at least twice as long as what I've got in Chroma Zero. But I thought like, okay, let's focus on that type of a scope, something small. And then I was also tremendously inspired by the way you learn and unlock progress in Outer Wilds. And so
that's the game I just started, and it didn't click for me, and now that I finished Chroma Zero and I get why that would be related, I feel like I could understand Outer Wilds better, and I'm gonna go back to that. So
you know, the key with that game is just explore everywhere. So if you go somewhere and you get stuck or you get lost, just go somewhere else and like try to go everywhere. And if you've visited everything, the pieces start to fall in place. And that's kind of what I wanted to build was, you know, that type of an experience where you could learn more and more if you just kept exploring the space I was building.
Very cool. So we kind of mentioned some of the inspirations and we can obviously name them, but I'd like for you to explain a little more about how or why some of those are good descriptions. Like obviously the Cyan World games you've mentioned as well, or The Witness make a certain amount of sense. And you just talked about the Outer Wilds. What other kind of deeper connections could you make there for some other games so that people can help understand like why they should check this out?
You know, it's fun. I definitely made it for a certain audience, right? Like I can tell you a little bit about my background, but this was my first commercial game. So I wasn't expecting to like get it to the point where it was being ported on Xbox and where I've got it on PlayStation. And, you know, it's like, it's still being played and purchased. I thought I would just kind of get it out the door and, you know, move on to the next like hobby project almost.
Okay.
You know, I guess you asked about foundational inspiration, how could I pitch it to people? You know, if you liked Riven, for example, that's a Cyan Worlds game. That was the team that did Myst, and they kind of took their formula and tweaked it, and I think, you know, really like perfected it in Riven because everything kind of connects at the end. All the work you do kind of leads up to. Actually, I remember it vividly because we had everything perfect And we, I think if you know the moment where kind of everything comes together, you mm-hmm. also, at least in the old PC version that I had to play, you did everything right, and then you had to like close a thing and then push a button. Mm. And we did everything except we didn't know there was a button to push.
Right. So,
like,
right.
We were stuck for like a week and we're like, what did we do wrong? And it was like literally just pushed the button. And I think I snuck into Barnes and Noble and like looked up a hint guide because that's how you had to do it back then, pre-internet, you know, and like as I go, we did that. Oh, we did that too. Oh, there's just a button? Okay, great. So, you know, onward.
I'm actually playing Riven now on the side that they've just released a remaster on consoles, and I put that down to play your game. So,
Her and Jacob were nerding out over Myst and Riven the other week.
It's crazy. It's like, it's a little crazy to me. Like, you played my game first, you haven't played Antichamber, you dropped Outer Wilds, and you're in the middle of Riven, because like that's the breadcrumbs for me are the other way around. Like,
right.
But for, you know, for an audience that likes that type of first person exploration, like no, you know, time limit, nothing dexterous that they need to be able to do. It's a very fun game to be in for a little while. And then I guess like the way you played it is the way I recommend people to play it, which is like, give it an hour, give it an hour and a half, make some progress, and then go water the plants or do the dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you will, like, your subconscious kind of chews on the way the connections are made, and then you go to sleep and then you wake up and you go, oh yeah, like I know what I need to do next. And it's kind of funny that way. So people tell me they solve it in their dreams. People tell me they solve it while they're driving. And people tell me they play the game a lot when they're not in front of their computer.
She played it and solved it during an interview.
Yeah, I did. We were doing an interview on Tuesday and I could not put it down. I realized I was right at the end, and I actually, that was the first time I picked up your guide on Steam. And cause I was like,
I heard that part.
What? So I was just sort of like shouting in the Twitch chat every time I got a new color, and I was like, I don't, oh my god, I'm magenta. All right, cyan's next. All right. So, how do you feel about people picking up Chroma Zero and putting it down because it's too hard? Was that your intention to make it hard? Like, I feel like there were some negative comments on the storefronts because people didn't have the brain power to get further than the first reset. Is that disheartening to you? Is it something you expected?
I mean, listen, it's like, if you look at the Steam reviews, it's 96% positive or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And like, PlayStation and Xbox, there's not as many reviews. Do people even look at those? I don't know. But like they're
sometimes they do. Unfortunately, there's, you know, just like any place, there's people who post just dumb shit.
Fair.
Yeah.
You know what? You can read it and see it's dumb though, right?
So some of the Xbox reviews are just like toxic.
Well,
they're on a popular game and it's just the dumbest comments trying to pass off as reviews.
Yeah.
I didn't make a game that's but was supposed to be popular. I don't think it'll ever be popular. I made it for a particular type of person, and I think they can read between the lines on those things. And then, like when I built the game, the very first thing the game asks you to do is like not what a normal game asks you to do. I don't want to spoil it, but there are definitely people who are going to load in and like I don't want to demean them or anything. That's like, it's not like they're looking for yellow paint, like that sort of extreme like guidance, but they're not used to what the game is asking them to do, at least this early in this type of a game. And if they bounce off it, you know what, it's like, that's okay. I need the way the game is structured. I want someone to not fight, I guess, but like be curious and be persistent for about 20, 30 minutes and it will click. But if you don't get there, and you know, just want to hit the refund button, like that's fine. It's, you know, that's actually why, like, I have a demo up on Steam forever, you know, because I'd rather somebody download the demo and then like get into it for 15, 20 minutes and make that decision. And, you know, eventually, like, one of their friends will tell them they were, you know, off their rocker. But I see it in, frankly, I see it in Outer Wilds, which is like my favorite game. And like, same thing. It's the best gaming experience I think I've ever had. And people put it down because, you know, they get I one, did. Two, 3 hours. Yeah.
And like the first time.
And it's like, yeah. And I get that. I get it. But I don't think you can, deliver that experience to some players without the risk of turning off other players. So I totally accept it.
Okay. And thank you so much for putting a guide on Steam that didn't give away all the answers. Like I said, I didn't really need a nudge until the world went black. Really, I laughed out loud when I got to that point in the guide where I realized, like, oh, okay, yep, I'm totally lost. And so I found this guide. What do I do now? That was brilliant.
I've had some entertaining messages from her over the past couple of weeks.
You know who we can thank for that, actually. So I wrote the guide, but I wrote it with a couple of players, and one of them specifically didn't get through it, but was very kind and was like willing to help with the guide part. And that was, I think that made the guide so much better because like I know all the answers and I kind of know what I intended people to think. And they brought a lot of perspective as like, you know, well, actually, no, like I had these thoughts instead. And, you know, that's what you should be addressing in a guide for people that don't get it, you know?
Yeah.
So it was collaborative.
For the people that don't get it, have you seen a decent number of refunds, or are there a good number of people who bought it, played it, and are like, this isn't for me, but I respect what he did. I'm not going to ask for a refund.
When I look at my Steam has that data. So I don't have more than, I don't have like an abnormal refund amount when like Steam tells you it's like 5% or something. Like I think I'm right there. And then when you break down that 5%, a bunch of them have more to do with the fact that the game is built in Unreal Engine. And it's like the game looks simple if you look at the textures and the geometry and like the, it's a very like a lo-fi looking game. So if you buy that and then you play it on your laptop, and you weren't expecting it to be like an Unreal 5 game that uses its dynamic real-time lighting engine, and it's like it just is greedy, then you're in for a bad time, and you don't like the performance, and so you hit refund. I get that more than, I probably get that, you know, half as much as like the game wasn't for me.
That makes sense, especially with how bitchy computers can be these days.
Yeah.
To put it gently.
And I think I noticed my Xbox fan working a little overtime during the game, so that might also explain that. Yeah. Certainly it worked fine for me on Xbox otherwise, but so
I still need a lot of horsepower to get 60 frames on an Xbox. So
it took me like 13 hours to complete. Admittedly, that's a little longer because I was writing a review and had the game open during other activities like, you know, reviews and stuff. So I'd say closer to like 10 hours actual time. What would you say is the average time for people to figure out the world and get to the ending?
It's so like that the bell curve peak is like starts around 7 hours and goes to like 10 hours.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Like, yeah, definitely some people like fly through it. I don't. Very few people will do it faster than like 5 hours.
Yeah.
You know, but they're out there, and I also don't know if they're, you know, like this is the thing. Like sometimes I play a game and I'm like not really into a super big challenge, and so as soon as I get stuck, I just go look at a hint, and then I keep going. Yeah. And so whereas another player may have burned a half hour trying to figure something out. So yeah. You know, I see reviews with 5-6 hours and people say they loved it, and I don't know or care if they looked up anything, but they might have, and that might have shortened the time.
I'm actually worried. So I'm on a data tracking site for Xbox called trueachievements.com, and there are achievement hunters that I think would buy your game if they knew that they could complete it in under 5 minutes with a guide. And I hate to rob them of that experience. And so I'm actually not writing solutions intentionally. I was the first person to complete it on the website according to Xbox tracking there. And I want to encourage people to play this game, but I don't want to give them the answers. I don't want to rob people of that experience. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's a weird thing. I streamed this last week as well to show it off, to encourage a few streamer friends of mine to give it a try, because I think that it is their type of game. I really hope that they will take that recommendation, because I think that they're the sort of people who would enjoy it. I think there are a lot more people than I realize that would enjoy it. Yeah,
there were a lot more people than I realized that are enjoying it. So,
well, good.
You know, it's been really cool to see the Metroidvania community is definitely some people like different flavors of Metroidvanias. You know, it's a small niche, and I've gotten a lot of support from them. And then, you know, the games that inspired it, those communities have also embraced it. So, you know, I'm on like Reddit, the Outer Wilds subreddit, the Outer Wilds. Actually, this is probably one of the reasons, like, I went to find playtesters in a lot of these communities. I knew who I was making the game for. And so, you know, one of the first places I stopped by was Outer Wilds modding Discord. So this is a community that makes small experiences, well, some are very large, that are mods of Outer Wilds, so you can play like a whole new story that fans are writing and creating. And you know, that was like a place where I could find players who knew the genre and could give me some very good feedback, you know, really helped craft the game. It's got my name on it, but when you get to the credits, I'm sure you saw, like, just a lot of people gave their input and helped shape the game. And I think that's made it a little bit more of a, like, a broad appeal than I expected.
I don't want to give anything away, obviously, but I like the presentation of how you did that at the end as well. That was fun.
Yeah.
Kind of talking about the Outer Wilds, you've been nominated for at least one award that I saw online. You've gotten a nod on your page from the creative director of the Outer Wilds. Any other accolades, or, I mean, what have you gotten as far as that goes?
I've been featured. Actually, right now the Steam game is being featured in something called the Cerebral Puzzle Showcase.
Perfect.
So it was invited to that last year.
I just got an email about that event today. That's going until what, the 4th? Something like that.
Well, I was focused on when it started, which was today at 1. Yeah.
So, I think it's a week.
So I don't know how long it lasts, but that's put on by a group that does a lot of puzzle games. I'm probably going to mispronounce her name. I think it's Drake Neck and Friends. So they coordinate it, and they're awesome. A lot of their games are just like tops of the genre too. And then Thinky Games is a publication that they're probably just friends, but they, you know, it's a small puzzle community. They do something called Thinky Direct, which is a showcase where they announce a whole bunch of, you know, new releases and new demos and that kind of thing. And so I've had, I think he did a review, and that's probably up on the Steam page. And so in terms of accolades, I haven't really like pushed it out there to go try to win any awards. I did when I was making it, to your point at the beginning about the quote from Alex Beecham.
Yes.
I was very inspired by Antechamber and Tunic and Outer Wilds. And I think I signed up on Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. When it was like very new, I think. And I was just like, I had those three games in my head as like the big inspirations, and all three of the developers were on Blue Sky. And so, as opposed to like a Twitter where it's just like a noise fest all the time, Blue Sky was just like, if you wanted to talk to somebody, you could just like send them a message. And so I didn't know if any of those developers logged into Blue Sky very much, but it was very easy for it to not be noisy, you know? So
yeah.
I sent each of them a message and said, hey, you've inspired me to make a game, and it's, I think I was probably mostly done at the time. And so I said, like, if you want to play a copy, it would just feel good because, you know, you never got to play your own game, and it's that kind of game where you really only can like play it once. So,
yeah,
you know, I made one, and maybe it gives you a little bit of that feeling. I don't know, but like, I just wanted to give you my game. So here you go. And then they all got back to me, and Alex played it. I guess I caught him at the right time, and he gave me, you know, he got into it and gave me a nice quote for it and has been very supportive. It's been great.
It's awesome. So we've kind of danced around this already, but like, what really has the player reception been since launch, both on PC and this console release so far?
I guess better than I would have imagined. I put it out in December of 2024, and there were so many people who played it and so many people that kind of like joined my Discord and were fans that I think by like May of 2025, I had volunteers that wanted to translate it into their own language.
Oh, nice.
I got 12 localizations done. And I paid everybody, even if they weren't professional. There were a couple of them were professional, which was cool. And then I was sitting on this Steam game that like was just still selling and had 12 languages. And I was like, well, yeah, I wonder if I ask PlayStation and Xbox if they'll like let me launch on those consoles. And they did. So I figured out how to do ports, and I put out the PlayStation one a year after release, December 2025. And then, you've been the benefactor of the Xbox release, which was a little later, but hey, we got it done. So
any plans for Switch at all? Or is that just a complicated thing to get a dev kit for?
The first Switch is, I'm not going to say underpowered for Unreal 5, but
fair,
underpowered for my level of proficiency with Unreal 5. I'm sure there are some talented developers who could take my game and make it run on that hardware, but I'm not that guy. so Switch 2 may be powerful enough, but at the same time, I think I'm good. Like it's been a wild ride of, you know, 18. Like I think I said at the beginning here, I was in my shower and I wanted to make this a 1 month project, right?
Right.
So here I am on like month 18 and it's still going. And I'm like, yeah, I think I want to go work on that other game again. You know, I think I want to see what I could do. So, so the Xbox release in my head is like wrapping this up, and, I think it's got a life. I mean, I kind of teased with my friends. I'm like, yeah, my game's not dead yet. I mean, there's a lot of indie games, the solo developers, and they go out and, 2 weeks later, that's it. You know, nobody's playing them anymore. And so mine's not dead yet. Monty Python style. I love it. And, you know, if people are talking about it, it will live on. And that's encouraging because I'd love to make another game.
Awesome. Well, so you mentioned earlier you've worked on other stuff and this is just your first commercial project. What other kinds of stuff have you worked on?
How nerdy do you want me to get here?
I mean, by all means, go deep.
Okay.
That's what she said.
Do you know what a ROM hack is?
I guess.
I see somebody said yes. So you tell me where are we in terms of understanding what that means?
Like, I mean, so you edit, like, so usually it involves just like editing sprites to existing games, although sometimes it can be adding new levels and shit like that.
Randomizers.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Okay, so for one of my big hobbies is arcade gaming.
Okay.
So, you know, like I grew up, you know, Pac-Man was fun, but like I played Street Fighter and, you know, Mortal Kombat and NBA Jam and that sort of era. Early, mid, and late 90s. And I just love those arcade games. And, at some point in time, nobody wanted them anymore. Like they were like getting thrown away. sort of like the death of the American arcade. All those arcades just sort of evaporated. And all that hardware was just like, it was just getting thrown away. So like it was cheap. It was, I had the realization someday, it was like, I could literally buy the PCB, like the brain that is a Street Fighter II arcade game. And I can just buy that. And it's like $50. And so I did. Getting it to run is a whole other adventure. But it sure beat the Super Nintendo port of it. You know, you were playing the real game. And so I got, now when you buy that hardware, it breaks. You have to learn how to fix it. It's a little bit like buying an old car. You may need to fix the cabinet and the monitor that it runs on. You may need to fix the power supply that powers everything. You may need to fix the actual board. And that I used to work on old cars, and it kind of reminded me of that. So I now live on the East Coast, where old cars rust. But I can have a little soldering station in my basement, and I can fix old arcade PCBs. Once you know the hardware, it's exciting to get into the software side. And so running emulators like MAME, have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
So MAME is this gigantic and unbelievable 30 plus year community project to document and preserve like every arcade machine out there. It's expanded even beyond arcade machines, but it's just this wonderful repository of knowledge and a wonderful set of software and debugging tools. And it makes doing arcade ROM hacks pretty doable. I'm not going to say easy, because they're not easy, but like for somebody like me who was getting into it, all of those tools, like the first thing I ever wanted to do was like play around with Pac-Man and just like kind of flip the whole game one direction so that I didn't have to rotate my monitor all the time. And like that was doable. And then I just kind of went into that rabbit hole and I started doing crazy ROM hacks, which, if you want to know more, I can tell you more, but I'll stop there and we'll see how that did.
I mean, that was pretty fascinating, I'm going to be honest. Like, keep talking.
Okay. So, let's see. I think I did a Pac-Man hack. And then, does anybody know Neo Geo?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. So there's a game. Boy, it's going to sound crazy. There's a game called Twinkle Star Sprites. It's like a shoot 'em up game where you've got like a spaceship and you're like shooting enemies that are coming down from you. Mm-hmm. Except it's two player, like two player Tetris, where if you do well, your opponent gets like hurt. So it's like that at the same time. And now I did a trainer for that game. Like there's a community that plays it competitively, and you know, they wanted to be able to like see the hitboxes and load up certain scenarios and things like that. So, but inside of that game's code, there is a fighting game, like a Street Fighter game.
Really?
Yes. So it was the developers of Twinkle Star Sprites made it probably on their free time, and then they just hid the code. So it's there, and it's incomplete. And what it is two cakes that hit each other in the face.
Wow.
Like the pastry, like cake. So it's,
that
it's
is
like
amazing.
It's called Cake Fighter. A digital archaeologist in Japan unearthed this code. And like as a joke, I was like, I should make that a real game. And then I sort of like looked in the mirror and went, I could make that a real game. And so if you go look up Cake Fighter, Neo Geo MVS, you'll see a video of my ROM hack, which is pulling Cake Fighter out of Twinkle Star Sprites, glossing it up a little bit. I've got like my daughter's voice in there. She says, when the title screen comes up, she's 5 years old and she says, Cake Fighter. And then like it's just, you can pick a character and then there's like special moves and you just hit each other in the face, and that's the game. So it did that, and then
that down to
I think I just found the video.
Welcome to my nerd rabbit hole. Thank you.
Yes.
So I did that. I did a port of a Neo Geo CD game to MVS. I got pretty ambitious with some shoot 'em up games. I did some. There's some things about shooting games that like I don't particularly enjoy. And you can fix them if you do, like. If you can just do ROM hacks where you go, I like it better if this game does it this way. And I would just do that, and then I can play the game the way I wanted it to. So yeah, I did a very, very large one, which like gave me some confidence that like, wow, I really got into this deep. I wonder if I should actually just make a real game, because when you're working with all of this stuff, none of it's your property, none of it's your intellectual property, you know? And it takes a lot of time. So yeah, I think I got there and said like, well, I'll just try Unreal. Let me download this thing and see if I can make a game with that instead.
You would get along really well with another guest that we have on the show frequently, Adam Rippon. He's the creator of Dragon Fantasy Book 1 and 2 RPG retro style game. Out of boredom, he converted Final Fantasy 1 to a Game Boy Color game.
That's my jam. That's very cool.
He was going to do just Game Boy, but then someone made fun of him like, oh, well, that's not a real Game Boy Color sprite because it's not the real colors. Yeah. And so just to spite a guy, he did a full native Game Boy Color port of Final Fantasy 1.
Yeah, that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
Boredom and spite. Magic. Yeah,
the best things operate on,
you know,
spite,
like it's one little thing. And if it just gets in your brain, then you go like, I could probably do that. And then you just want to see, you're like, am I right? Can I do it? And then you learn so much along the way too. It's just a fun journey. And then at the end, yeah, if you get to post it and be like, yeah, I did it, spite you, you know, it's even better.
Love it. On the subject of arcade games, what are your thoughts on what Hamster is doing with the Arcade Archive series?
I'm not familiar with that. What are they doing?
They have been releasing over the past number of years, just straight arcade conversions of hundreds of arcade titles, ranging from like, Nintendo exclusive things. You'll get Excitebike Versus, Punch Out, like the original arcade Punch Out. They have like Ridge Racer on there. We cover them pretty much every week. This week's show is Tag Team Wrestling. So every week they have a brand new arcade game. They also did an entire line of every Neo Geo game.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So they just get a license for it and then publish it on what is it coming out on?
It's on everything. There's
everything.
Almost everything. Arcade Archive's original releases were on Switch and PS4. And now the Arcade Archives 2, which is, I guess, a more advanced version, is on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5.
That's cool. I'm looking it up right now. But I know there's some other... So, you know, what I enjoy, there's some companies out there. One of them's M2. They do... Like, they take old properties and they bring them to new consoles or new, you know, Steam... Some of them, there's one on the arcade world called Exa. And, you know, I think there's a market for it. I'm in that market, you know. I love a lot of these old games. And the one thing I guess I would say, maybe this is just the ROM hacker in me, is that there is absolutely an opportunity to update these things. So you could take, you know, what is Punch-Out? I remember Punch-Out. 007373, was it 5963? Is that the code for Mike Tyson, right? Like,
I think so.
Great game, played it to death. And if you were to just give me that on Switch, cool. But if you were to give me that on Switch, but then like layer on top, by the way, you know, here's all the places you could hit the different characters to get your stars. I don't know if you know
all of
those.
That would be amazing.
Right. Like, I never knew those things and there was no way to know all those things. And what would happen is I'd go over to my friend's house and it would be like, Well, yeah, you just do a left hook right here at 122 seconds, and that knocks him flat on the floor. And it's like, well, I had no idea that you could do that, or, you know. So just sort of unearthing all of those little aspects of those games, you know, adding trainers, adding guides, making it a more robust experience. I'm for that, too, you know. I would love to play the original, and then I'd love to play whatever somebody else wants to come up with and call it a remix or something like that, because then you get both.
Do you have like a favorite or a top three like classic arcade games? Just curious.
Oh boy, if I could only have three.
I mean, yeah, I figured that was an easy-ish number to not make it just one, but yeah.
Boy, it's so funny because, you know, there's the stuff that I loved as a kid. Right? So, like, if you say, like, just you can only have one, dude. What's the last one you're gonna sell? It's probably like Street Fighter Champion Edition, Street Fighter II Champion Edition.
Okay.
But like, I actually don't play that one anymore much, because like I've played it a lot. I've just played it a ton.
Yeah.
And when I got into the arcade world, I just discovered so many other games I'd never heard of. You know, so many rare games, so many crazy games, so many overlooked games. And they're what I play now because they're, you know, new to me, but they're stylistically familiar. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I should just, like, see. I don't know. There's one you could look up that's nobody's ever heard of. It's from a Korean company. It's like a Final Fight kind of game where you're just walking around beating people up. But it's off-the-wall bizarre. It's called Age of Heroes Silk Road 2. And this will be the first time anybody's ever heard those words on a podcast. I almost care. it's like buried, and it's so buried.
I've looked it up. There's a video of it, some arcade playthrough of it. So yeah. I will check that out later.
And it's like, it's just fun and weird. And, that's what I like. It's like, I like learning about all of the attempts that people were making to try to, like, you know, innovate, capitalize on, like, they were trying to capitalize on the trend of beat 'em ups. Mm-hmm. But they were trying their own little innovative twists, you know, and some were great. I think for the shoot 'em up genre, I probably like Dodonpachi more than anything else, because that's one I also spent a long time on that one doing ROM hacking. And so that's like a vertical, you know, shooter where you're the spaceship and you're shooting aliens and stuff, but just everything about it's so put together so well.
Glad I knew that name. I have Dodonpachi Resurrection for Xbox 360. I forgot about that.
Huh. Yeah. It's in a long series. Dodonpachi is the second one in the series. This first one was Donpachi, and then it goes up from there. So
back to Chroma Zero, because we ended up on a tangent there, which was really awesome, by the way. So I had a couple other questions I wanted to ask. I wanted to talk about the music. How did you meet with the musical artists for this project?
Music's good, huh?
Yeah. What kind of descriptors did you put out to get that in response?
So here's what happened is, I'm in the middle of development and it's like an okay game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured it was like, you know, I'll finish it. I'll put it out there and then like just work on something else. And then I came upon a very dramatic, mechanic, which was how, the world can change colors. Like,
yes,
I'd always have the notion that that like balance was important, but when I actually coded it in such that like if you broke red, like all the red just drains from everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I programmed that up, and then like I put myself in the world and then I triggered it and I went, oh my gosh, this is actually like way more dramatic than I like was intending. Like it's now got some juice to it. It needs more than just like free music, you know, or like whatever I can go find, you know, I should get some really good music for this. So, as it turns out, my cousin is a phenomenal musician who does professional work. And so, I always had it, you know, in my back pocket. I should call up Adam for my big game when I'm ready to do something really good. But Chroma Zero kind of turned into that, and so I called him up, and he works. The studio is called Young Lion Audio. He and his co-composer Dan. I pitched him the gig, and I don't know if you call it calling in a favor, but I wanted to like hire them for real too, because I didn't want they do small films, they do commercials, they do TV, and so like that's their livelihood. So it's not like I could say like, hey, could you just do my game? It was more like I want to pay you whatever your market rate is, so that I get a chunk of your time, so that I'm just a client, so that you do my game, because I really would like you to do my game. But you know, I spent a lot of time over the years, hanging out with my cousin, and we speak musical shorthand that, we both like the same types of stuff. And so it was really cool working with him, and it was really easy to get, everything up and running, and it's easy to be on the same page. In fact, that moment that I described where I realized, I had a lot of drama visually. Mm-hmm. When I saw it, I thought of one of his compositions. And so I was able to send it to him, and I put his song under it and was just like, this vibe works. Like, here's where we can start, and what can we do? So I think the score is something like 24 minutes total music.
Something like that. Yeah, that sounds about right. It's a good loop, and then as you progress through the game, you get different tracks added on, and that was really exciting. Like, I really felt like I got somewhere when I heard that different music.
We're able to milk it out. It was, you played it for 10 hours, you listened to the same 24 minutes of music for 10 hours, but like it worked,
Yeah, it's available on Steam. It's available on Bandcamp, I found out as well. So pretty excited for that. I'll be getting a copy off Bandcamp soon to support that.
On Fridays, it's 100% to them, I think, Bandcamp Fridays.
Yes, definitely. I were there any kind of like descriptors that you, you were talking about like musical shorthand and that sort of thing. Were there like specific words or ideas that you put into like, this is what I want in this moment? Like, I don't want to go too far down my own rabbit hole, but there was like a David Lynch moment where he's talking to Trent Reznor and he's like, you're lying in a box, your head's in a box, and there's snakes whizzing past your head at 100 miles an hour. I want that sound. And he's like, I'm not a sound designer, man. But he's like, no, go with it, go with it. You know, like, was there anything like that involved?
No snakes. So I think what was helpful, like I had the track he wrote the track on his own. He put out an EP, and so I had been listening to it, and it's a lot of piano and choral and just gorgeous. In fact, it's the credits music.
Oh, okay. Friends, I think it's called.
Yeah, Friend.
Yeah.
So it's the credits music. To his words, he says it's too melodramatic for the game, but it does work really well at the very end when you've I don't want to spoil what you're doing at the very end, but it works really well for the ending, right? So we had that, and texturally, I liked the instrumentation that was there, so it was a good place to start. I think what I probably said is, the world is what it looks like, and so a little bit of synthesizer, can be a part of this world. But what I really like is organic instruments. I like that it's piano. I like that it's voice. I think it's a good contrast. And then he went in. There's actually on my Discord, I've got him talking about the choices they made for probably 14 or 15 minutes recorded. So he goes through and can describe like, this vibe here, we wanted to go like, Zelda Ocarina of Time, like Temple of Time style. And like this theme here is like it would be like a Marvel hero theme if it was filled with brass and energy, but instead it's it's subdued with the piano, but it is the hero theme,
Nice.
And then the one point maybe that is the closest to the snakes in the box example, is that we have, so the whole game, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know where you are exactly. It's not that type of game that's really like choreographed. Like, you know, you walk into the town and the town music plays. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like that. So there's only one moment in the whole game. Well, actually not even. So when you launch the game, you could have been at the title screen for 30 seconds already. So mm-hmm. I don't know where, and it launches right from the title screen. So I don't know what you're seeing. I can't choreograph that moment. There's only one moment in the game I could choreograph. And it's a spoiler if I was to talk about it. But I'm pretty sure it was right after you had to look something up because you didn't know exactly what to do.
Yep.
And little moment of indecision, which is sort of part of the game and part of the themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, the very next reset is the only time in the game where I'm positive I can control what you're seeing for the next 50 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
And that track, I love it so much.
Yeah.
And that was the moment, like, I was like, these are, and since they do film, you know, and they do TV, like, that's kind of what they're used to doing is like choreographing, you know, to something visual, you know, exactly. So we really timed that one up really well. And it just like still, you know, chills up my spine kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, I have filled up an awful lot of time asking questions. And does anybody else have any questions? Jacob, Aki, Joe?
Just gloss over me? What the fuck? What the hell? Jacob, Aki, no one else?
No. I mentioned Joe.
You're not the host today, so, you know, that's your fault. You shouldn't give away the power, yo.
Are there any plans for physicals?
Oh, man. That'd be so cool, but none of those people are calling me. I don't think they'd take my call either yet. So. I'll take the, you know, if EXE files and burn them on a CD and mail it to you if you want. There you go.
That might work.
I'll have a CD drive.
I do.
There you go. It's probably about as close as I can get. Yeah. I would personally love it.
I'd floppy.
I'm waiting for a zero plushie. Isn't that a thing now? Plushies for everything.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be great? It's perfect.
You could probably get that done. I know there's places out there that make plushies for everything.
Makeshift.
Makeshift. That's what it was. Yeah.
So you did ask about the soundtrack. I do know somebody who was looking at getting the vinyl, getting a custom vinyl pressed of the soundtrack.
Nice.
So I think you get lossless files off of Bandcamp. And so I was directed them there and said, like, that's the best you probably can do. And you should, you know, do a mastering pass to get it to vinyl's dynamic range. And then like, yeah, ship it to the, you can do like one off vinyl from somebody who can do like a lathe cut probably. And so it's not going to sound excellent, but you would have the soundtrack on vinyl.
Collectors love that stuff too. So perfect.
I forgot to mention in my review that there was a cat to pet, and I read somewhere that there are more cats than perhaps I found. How many cats are there in the game? Are there three or there more?
Am I
ruining something?
Is it a spoiler?
I don't know.
I don't mind. So people roll into the Discord all the time and they say, I pet the cat. And then I just ask how many and they go, there are more. And then I say, yes, there are three cats. So
okay, you can have three. Fun.
There's no like achievement for the other three. It just feels
right. Fun. Right.
It'd be great so if there was just one and you're just like, how many? There's more? Oh, you tell me.
Oh, people be hunting for hours looking for other cats.
It's like zero. It's, you know, zero is multidimensional. It is all over the place, but it is all one thing. That's how I envisioned the cat as well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Would you describe yourself as a cat person?
I have two cats now. Yeah.
All right.
When I was making the game, we didn't have cats though. I've had cats in my history and my daughter is infatuated with cats. So now I'm definitely a cat person though.
All right. Well, you should find out how many cats Joe has.
Oh God.
You know,
14.
Joe? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. 14. Plus two out in the backyard that we feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a raccoon and a groundhog.
We a couple of us are cat people here.
Well, I'm trying. So, my next game, I will definitely have cats as well. So,
all right. Well, what is next for you? Do you have other projects in the works that you can talk about?
I wouldn't call it production. I think it's still like pre-production, but this time around, I don't intend to be a solo developer. I like working with, experts. I like working with talented people. And now that I have a game, you got to point to and be like, look, I can make games, you know, it helps to recruit a team like that. So right now I'm working with just an unbelievably talented writer who hopefully we can nail a story that we both want to tell. And then I have like my pie in the sky dream art artist that I would grab for like concept art and, you know, maybe art direction if that could happen. And we'll see if I can like strike that deal or not. But once those two pieces, like once the story is really set and once the art direction really feels good, and I've played around with the art style in Engine a little bit, and I've found some people to work with me on that too. Like once those two pieces are good, then it would be more like, okay, let's start producing this game and, you know, start talking about it more. So I call it pre-production, and it's just the state where, like, I hope it works, and I hope we get to the production phase, but it's nothing like announceable or anything.
Gotcha.
But man, I'm excited. It's going to be very cool if we can pull it off.
Well, before we wrap up here, you were kind enough to hook us up with a couple of extra codes for your game Chroma Zero on Xbox. We have a giveaway going on with our Twitch viewers right now. We're going to have that running all night long. We've got 3 codes to give away, and I think I'm going to give the first one away right now. How's that sound?
I love it. Do it.
We'll do it with the dev here. Giveaway. Draw. The first winner tonight goes to Latino Heat. Congrats. You will be getting the first code. And we will have more to give away later on in the show.
Hope you have fun.
Yeah. But yeah, Evan, it has been
the same thing.
It has been awesome having you on the show, chatting with us. Where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
I'm the most real time thing you can get is my Discord channel. So hop on Steam. The Steam website for the game has a link to the Discord, and then just jump in. And I'm usually there. If you need, you know, personalized hints on the game, the community can help. Or sometimes I'm in there helping.
Or if you want the fourth cat.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, if you like this genre, if you're a fan of this genre, the Reddit Metroid Brania subreddit is just, you know, full of developers who are constantly testing the limits of the genre. I'm in there. I know a lot of the other developers who are making games in the genre, and like I'm pretty active there too. But yeah, if you want to, I'm pretty accessible. So if you just want to say hi, hop in my Discord.
Very good.
I guess if you don't want to say hi, you can like follow me on Blue Sky because I'm there.
That's what we're on too.
I don't I mostly am just celebrating other developers' stuff that's going on right now. So like I know some other friends of mine are releasing games this year. So you're like, that's what I'll be talking about for the most part. But when I'm finally ready to talk about more of my projects, I'm sure I will do it there too.
All right, Bree, do you want to wrap this up since you're in charge now?
How do I wrap this up?
Well, everyone, want to give a big thanks to Evan, of course, for coming on, chatting with us, hanging out. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back with more show. Stick around. We got news, reviews, all that fun stuff to take care of in just a few moments. Evan, it has been a pleasure. Do you have any final words to wrap this up?
No, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me. And, whoever asked if I regret it, definitely don't. This was great.
Yay!
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Evan for coming on, hanging out with us. And a huge thanks to Bree for playing co-host, or playing host for the beginning.
The hostess with the mostest.
Did you like that?
I did not like the suddenness of it.
Because I knew if I told you and you prepared, it would be like good.
Ah, yeah.
And practiced. And I didn't want that. I wanted you to be like, what?
So is Brie going to be the host more often now, or?
No, that was just because she was in charge of the interview. Yeah. She's like the only one who played it out of us.
Yeah.
I played like 10 minutes.
I played a bit more than that, but I don't think I got any further.
Yeah, I don't know. That game is weird. Like, I look forward to playing it more, but yeah, it's a bit bizarre so far. I'm curious, though. I'm real curious.
I look forward to understanding it well enough that I get anywhere in it.
I look forward to having more people to talk to about the game at some point, because I feel like I was, you know, like Charlie Day in that meme about all the conspiracy board, you know, from Sunny, like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody posted solutions and, you know, we might be around quicker.
No, we really wouldn't be.
Once I saw that 5-minute one, I was just like, oh, Jesus. Like, that's going to be quite the run. Like, that's got to be like quite the mind fuck doing that in 5 minutes or less.
Nope. Like, it's once you know, once you understand how the game works, a speed run is easy.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, you just have to figure out how it works.
The journey, is the problem. the game is the best part of the game is the journey to figuring out how the world works.
Yeah.
Now, answer me this at least. Is it possible to do the speed run like within like, oh, well, hold on. Like, it's not like you just end up hopping over to like some random stuff. You still have to activate a bunch of stuff like and run throughout the land, right?
You still have to do some stuff, yeah.
Okay.
And you still have to figure out how to make the speed run work. Like, it took me like 3 tries to figure out how to make the speedrun work, and the first step is turning the speedrun timer on.
that would probably help, yeah.
Does it have to be on from the very first time you start playing the game?
No, for the achievement, you have to delete your save data on your game that you've been learning on, and you have to turn the speedrun timer on in the settings, and then do the speedrun from start a fresh play with no resets.
Oh.
Yeah, you have 5 minutes to do it. No, you're not. You've got this. You've totally got this. And Zero will totally remind you of that at some point in the game. And it's fabulous.
I already feel plenty dumb without doing that part. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm doomed. Okay.
No, you got this.
Glad someone has faith, because I sure as shit don't.
Good stuff. No, should we get to news? Because we got news and reviews we got to tackle this week.
Yeah.
News that I have. Steam Deck prices skyrocketed this week. The 512.
Boy, howdy.
The 512 OLED went from $549 to $789.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1 terabyte went from $649 to $949. A $300 increase.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. I love AI companies.
Oh, this Ramageddon shit is getting stupid.
Yeah, and you just know that it's going to end up being like the fucking GPUs. Once everything starts to calm down, they're just going to be like, let's just make less of them to increase so the costs stay high.
And they won't make less. They'll just keep prices high. They just, once those prices go up, they'll never come back down.
Yeah, that's very likely too, yeah.
Hey, what, you think capitalism has the consumer's best interests at heart?
Yeah, really.
That's rich.
Yeah. Also rich will be Xbox later this year because Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 was announced. It will be coming out on Xbox Series, PS5, PC, and Switch 2. That's right. Call of Duty launching day and date on Switch, Nintendo platform, first time since Ghosts in 2013. Yeah. Campaign will only be single player on Switch 2, though. On the concessions they had to make.
Yeah. Okay. I'll live.
Yeah. 007 First Light sold 1.5 million copies in its first 24 hours.
Damn.
Did you see that? Did you see that video I posted on the Facebook page?
Nope.
Probably not.
Oh, like some guy was like, is this the gameplay of like 007? And it's just him tossing all of the enemies out the window. And he's just like, and like by the end of the video, and this is like a 2-minute video, by the end of it, he's tossed like 20 guys out the window, and you just look down and there's just this like huge body or this huge pile of bodies below the window. It's amazing. Oh, man.
I'm gonna have to watch that. PlayStation Plus monthly games for July were announced. They are getting Warhammer 40K Darktide, Grounded Fully Yoked Edition, and Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl 2.
Not bad.
How's that? PlayStation getting an Xbox game as one of their monthly titles. How weird is that?
Yeah. Yeah. That was my big haul.
Yeah, Grounded. One of the monthly games.
I hope they enjoy it. It's a good game.
Yeah.
Some bad news for Sony players. Well, like 12 of them. Destruction All-Stars is getting shut down later this year. The game and all currency was removed from sale on Tuesday the 26th, and gameplay, single-player servers will stay online until November 25th. The arcade mode challenges will remain playable, but in a limited fashion due to servers being offline after that date. And due to, quote, ongoing technical issues, the multiplayer servers are to remain offline and will no longer be available. What's the fucking point?
But what game is it?
Destruction All-Stars.
The heck?
The Vroomy Vroom Sony game for PS5 launch.
Vroom, motherfucker.
Yeah, the car combat game.
I do not remember hearing about this.
It was like one of their big games at launch.
Huh.
They only had like 3.
Okay.
You could like Google it and look it up and then be like, oh yeah, that one.
I know. I am looking it up and I'm like, I don't remember hearing anything about this game.
Nice. Anyway, Nintendo Switch Online. N64 update on June 4th. Getting Donkey Kong 64.
Cool.
Yeah. And final bit of news I have. Witcher 3 is getting a new expansion.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Of all games, The Witcher 3 Songs of the Past will launch next year.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Aki, what news do you have?
Well, Stop Killing Games has started kind of winning in the U.S., which is nice. It has gone through a few different places and been passed, but right now it's sitting in an area that has to, an approval area, that's all it is, and the ESRB is pulling the same shenanigans that, you know, the European version of it did, and they're not doing too well because of that, because it was... They already kicked the shit out of the European one, so, you know. So that's great, and hilarious, just to see them lose a little bit. And, yeah, that's really all the news I got, is just giggling at them, so, yeah.
Cool. Free.
Let's see. A Call of Duty streamer was banned last week because the Ricochet anti-cheat system Activision uses flagged the controller the streamer uses as an illegal third-party controller with input modifiers. The account has since been unbanned following an appeal showing the disabled streamer's setup with a quad-stick adaptive mouth controller for accessibility and a promise that they will look into not letting something like this happen again.
Ouch. Yeah, you might want to might not want to block those kind of controllers. You might want to do a little more work on that.
Yeah.
Ouch.
So Yeah. Let's see. People on the internet are pissed off about some polygons.
Again?
As they always are.
Again, yeah. The Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced version of Anne Bonny has less cleavage in her outfit, and people are angry, saying that she's the only character that they've changed that way.
The fuck was that?
It sounded that like deep. A laugh, but I... It, that was incredible timing. It was a...
That was Teak.
Even Teak's laughing at this shit.
Let's see. There's a game on Steam that I'm still looking into this one to see more about it, which is awful. It's called Plantation Simulator, and it is a game about... it's a farm sim where you can whip black slaves. It has been allowed on Steam for a while now, and an update came out recently trolling racists. Some people aren't happy about it, but Steam kind of allows a lot of these things to persist because of the way that they choose to run their platform. I read in one Reddit about the dev being an attention whore, so that was an interesting take on this game. But the game has actually been restricted in a couple of countries, so that's a thing.
I think that's the one Doc Havoc posted to me and was just like, what
the fuck? Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. And the last piece of news I have is the owners of the Peanuts Music, Lee Mendelson Film Productions, is suing Game Mill over their game Snoopy and the Great Mystery Club, stating that they violated copyright using copycat music that was too close to the original without getting any of the licensing for the original music. And they are asking for $300,000.
Jeez. I wonder if the game even made that much.
I don't know. It was a cute game.
It was.
We liked it.
Yeah,
More better games. So,
yeah,
I found where they're complaining about the cleavage stuff, and honestly, I'd be more worried about the fact that she just looks shittier in general. Like the coloration and stuff is so much worse. I'm gonna post the comparison in the general chat on our Discord. Everyone, go join the Discord. Apparently, the first one's the original. And her face looks better, in my opinion, just because the coloration is better to me than the other one, because it's all so bright and colorful, and it just...
Yeah, and I've seen some other comparison shots that I think the new version looks just fine.
A lighting issue.
Yeah, that could be a lighting in that angle, but yeah.
It definitely is. If it's a lighting issue, it's definitely a big issue, because god damn, that just looks uglier than shit.
I don't think it's ugly. It just looks different.
No, well,
there
like
you
it.
Go.
You're more pissed about the boobies.
I mean, I prefer the boobies of the first one. I'm not gonna lie, but I significantly more care that her face just looks fucking weird in that second picture. And it's very uncanny valley, and I hate it.
It's the lighting and it's the position of the face being different compared to the first picture. Like they didn't take an exact one-to-one comparison. They're just slightly off time-wise, and they probably could have done a better job of comparing them.
Yeah, I think the newer one definitely obviously has more polygons and stuff, so it's a lot smoother, but just that image looks just so uncanny. I hate it.
Well, that's what happens when you cherry-pick images and only guess. I've seen video of the game in motion, and it looks great.
Yeah.
I've seen a side-by-side of, what's his name, Kenway, running on a beach on the old game and the new game. The same beach, side-by-side, running the same direction, and it was like night and day difference in terms of scenery and foliage and visual flair. It was a whole different game, it seemed. So I'm actually looking forward to this one.
I'm very looking forward to it myself.
Looks rip the awesome. Boobies.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, it does. There's enough prostitutes in the game that you probably just look down and find a pair of boobs no matter where you're standing. It doesn't really matter.
I'm fat. All I have to do is look down. I see a pair of boobs.
Oh, that was great. Okay.
That's a free shot for anyone to take, and no one took anything. Wow. disappointed.
Hey, just because you want cum shots on your boobs doesn't mean anyone else has to be involved in that.
Yeah, that's too late now. You had your moment. It's too late. Jacob, what news do you have? What?
God damn it. It didn't pick it up, did it?
Nope. No, I didn't hear anything.
Nah, damn it. I made this like long sound that like I realized it was drawing out a bit, and then I was just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna run with it. And then apparently never picked up. So that sucks. Anyway, Star Citizen has passed $1 billion of funding. And now there's a new ship that you could buy for $5,000 that you can't fly yet.
Bam.
Beautiful.
We got that.
Aren't you one of the people who chipped in on that game, Jacob?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I paid $50 or $60 when it was first announced.
Do you think you'll ever play it?
Nah.
Nope.
I don't think I'll ever play it, mostly because I don't have a PC. I mean, Star Citizen is, like, theoretically playable, but, I mean, it's still an alpha. Yeah.
I have to play it in action.
Yeah, I just, you know, I gave my $60 to Chris Roberts because I wanted the next Wing Commander. Supposedly, I'll get it one day. If I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not one that I'm like, ugh, I wish I'd never funded it. Like, I just wish I'd be able to play it.
Yeah.
Ubisoft lost $1.5 billion last year.
Oh, geez.
Yep, sounds about right.
And former Tekka director Katsuhiro Harada finally went to a Waffle House.
Yay!
And he thoroughly enjoyed his time, and he said he was going to come back at 3 a.m. For fight time, but no word on what happened. So, but the man finally gets it. So, fingers crossed, whatever his next project is, we get a Waffle House arena.
We better. Goddamn well better. All right, is that all the news then? We diving into reviews?
Yep.
Oh, hold on.
I don't know.
Oh, where the fuck is it?
It's Movie Watch. There.
Guys, I know you're not going to believe this, but there's going to be a third Super Mario Brothers movie.
Shocker.
Yes. Set to release 2029.
Jeez.
Has anyone watched the first two?
I watched the first one. I haven't seen the second one. My kids are like,
is it any good?
It's all right. Like, it's, I mean, the thing is it's aimed at kids. Like, and it
doesn't have any of that old humor that would go over the kids' heads. It's a sad shame.
I mean, no different than any other Illumination title. Like, the thing is that they make crowd pleasing, safe entertainment that, you know, keeps licenses for music from the 70s and 80s still going. You know, it's fine. Like, I don't know. I don't hate it, but I'm also like, it wasn't like a film, like when Super Mario Galaxy came out, I wasn't like, oh my God, I gotta go see it. Like, nah.
Hmm.
That's all I got.
Cool. All right, before we get into reviews, we have a decision to make. I need to decide which soda to have.
Okay.
I have four flavors of Mountain Dew. We can go with Dragon Fruit, Cabo Citrus, Supernova, or Whiteout.
Dragon Fruit.
Which one feels the best against your nipples?
Probably one of the three in the can.
Okay, but which three are in cans? Because I can't see them on the stream.
Okay, well then Supernova's out. And we're down to Dragon Fruit, Baja, Cabo Citrus, and Whiteout.
Cabo Citrus is the new one, right?
That came out last year and then was re-released this year with a different formula. I like last year's better. The newest is technically Whiteout, which just came in an American pack, which is an 18 pack of 6 code red, 6 voltage, and 6 whiteout. So yes, I have to buy 12 cans of shit to get 6 cans of golden nectar of greatness.
I mean, you could just give those cans to Sam, my oldest kid. Like, he would gladly take those cans of Mountain Dew off of off your hands.
Come on up and get them.
Well, my vote's for whiteout.
Mine's for the fruit one. I always
so one dragon fruit, one whiteout. We'll take out Cabo Citrus.
Oh, but what the fuck? I was going to vote for Cabo Citrus.
Jesus Christ.
Viewers, believe it up to chat.
Carnage, the only vote in fucking chat is Supernova. Citrus. They're all citrus. That's what Mountain Dew is. It's citrus.
All right, fine.
What Cabo Citrus.
Technically, whiteout is smooth citrus.
What is whiteout supposed to taste like?
Grapefruit.
Ooh. I want to try that.
Whiteout is probably one of my all-time favorites up there.
Golden Eye.
I mean,
is that really just
squirt?
I honestly, I've never had squirt, believe it or not. I should.
Oh, it's just pee.
Okay. I'll just pee in my mouth then. Golden Eye having a harvest pear cider. That sounds good.
Ooh, aren't they being fancy?
I mean, I could throw a wrench in the works and I have a pineapple orange mango kickstart, like the breakfast drink. I got one of those.
Yeah, but it's not breakfast time yet.
No.
That also sounds terrible, so I kind of want to vote for delicious. It.
Pineapple orange mango sounds bad?
I don't like any of those three fruits.
I'm allergic to mango, so.
Mm.
What?
That's fair.
That sucks.
Nah, it's fine because I actually don't like mango anyway, so I don't see it as an actual big loss. It's just annoying when
strawberry crush. Ooh, that sounds good.
Oh yes, it does.
I love strawberry soda. That's what Supernova is, strawberry melon. See, they're all good flavors. I don't know which one to pick.
I'll go with dragon fruit.
There we go. 2 for dragon fruit.
All right, 2 for dragon fruit.
All right, now pour it on your nipples.
No.
No, come on, take off your shirt. You're on cam.
First game off. Nope, not happening. But I will open it. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like to crack open a cold one on your... Never mind.
Jacob has problem. I so mean...
We all already knew that, but okay.
We know Jacob's all like... And then he's like,
job, drug addicts.
I've never been creamed on like this before. Oh, wait.
I love that clip. The Yay! Wait. The wait. It's so good on that. All right, let's get to reviews. We got 7 games to talk about tonight. Yes, 7. First up, Echo Generation 2, developed and published by Coco Cucumber, released May 27th, Xbox Play Anywhere and PC for $24.99. In Echo Generation 2, you step into the past as Jack the Father. What begins as a family vacation spirals into a mystery of hidden experiments, impossible realities, and the truth behind it all. Bree, you probably shouldn't tell us what the truth is, but you could tell us about like the experiments and stuff.
I could talk about some of it. This is a sci-fi turn-based RPG with deck building. Normally I'd whine about deck building, but it was actually pretty easy in this game and enjoyable. Really confusing at the beginning of the game is a chapter select that gives you no real indication of what you're supposed to do. I analyzed the diagram and figured out there were different character stories that all lead to the same basic conclusion chapters, but I thought this was a bit weird to start off the story with no real instruction. So I started off with Sister M. Each chapter takes, I don't know, an hour or more if you suck. And there are multiple chapters telling related but different stories. So let's break down some of the story, which is ultimately a little story about Jack and Diane.
Are they talking on some chili dogs?
No.
Ah.
I started out with Sister M, who's like a preteen in a research lab, and there are guards all around, and she has like psionic powers or something like that. And she's breaking out of the facility and picking up slack. I like a short girl with an orange jumpsuit. Somehow she's turned a toy named Hap into a living being. It's a toy cat. But there's no starfish on this cat like in the first game. She's looking for her friends who have been transported from the facility to elsewhere, and she fights her way through the guards and the robots to fight the commander, who does some dimension shifting machine nonsense, and we get a cutscene with some demons, and then we move on to Jack. Jack's story. You might recognize him as Dylan and Lily's dad from the first game. Meowzy the cat is back too, so the starfish is sort of back in play. But you should figure out by now that this sequel is actually a prequel to what happened with Dad in the first place. Kids are younger. Lily's barely a toddler. The family's out on a lakeside cabin vacation. And, like, all hell breaks loose at Jack's work. And it's the same research facility that Sister M was breaking out of. There's your connection there. And there are monsters attacking the town. And we've got to come together as a family. Even Lily, the little toddler, gets in on the action with some deadly kitchen knives. And Dr. Lee from the FST calls Jack in to help stabilize the portal. And then when his story progresses, Jack gets the help of Boulder, who's like a furry gremlin, not a cute mogwai, but a furry gremlin who like rips things to shreds with his powerful claws. And then the next story is Anata Z, who's like a zombie of some kind. And this is in black and white. It's very noir. She's looking for her baby. She's lost all her memories and came to hugging a tree, and her world is desolate and sad. There's mechanical overlords to conquer and plenty of places to get lost and confused in this chapter, at least for me. The last chapter before the convergence, tales, is Nolivia, and hers is a cyberpunk tale. With her friend Strix, who's like a large fox-like creature, she aims to catch bounties in her dark city. Besides being cyberpunk, it's a pretty alien planet full of like interesting creatures, like the sort of stuff you'd see in Guardians of the Galaxy. And also there's raccoons in this world too. So the beginning of the story felt disjointed. The separate chapters needed to happen to make sense of our characters' stories converging, but the absence of a reason for that at the beginning made it feel strange and pointless. Like, we were just witnessing a bunch of concepts for movies by playing the origin stories of a bunch of superheroes. Remembering the first game helped make a bit of sense of some things, like Dylan and Lily's dad's disappearance and the FST research facility doing some strange science. But I mean, eventually all these origin stories converged into one place and kind of made sense. It was just like a weird road to get there. And additionally, I felt like they were parts of stories that were just thin or left unanswered. You sort of just get thrown into the hero role and have to accept it to progress. I guess in their origins, you get like a hero's journey, but then they're just being thrust into the situation for some characters. It just didn't make sense. I don't know. Let's talk about combat and deck building, which is a lot of the game. This started off as no joke. It took me way too long to play my cards right to beat the first mini-boss. There's a lot of mini-boss and boss fights. Like, this is a really truncated RPG. It gets right to the meat of battles without a lot of grind. There is some grind that you might need to do, but it's very minimal. The good news is combat's pretty forgiving. You can usually go back and grind easily and try again on boss fights with a lot of hassle until later. Things you'll need to pay attention to are things like effects, like bleed, flame, frozen, poison, you know, stuff like that, stances, shields, and health. And the game will give you a little tutorial the first time you encounter things, mostly in what is her name? Sister M's chapter. You'll need to update your deck pretty often with better cards as you acquire them or purchase them. You'll also have to manage defensive parries, or whatever you want to call them. Basically, when it's the enemy's turn, you'll have a second or two to watch for their defense icon and press the A button at the appropriate time to defend for some damage. You'll likely have status effects from those attacks, though. One status thing that'll happen is junk cards. You can they can cause your deck to get overrun with junk. You'll have to waste your turns to get rid of them, or they'll have other effects. In a recent update to the game, they added a numerical counter to how much you block, which I thought was really helpful because it just said perfect before. And now I can at least see that there's a numerical value and it's not just arbitrary. Some attacks also have some quick time presses for higher damage, like Dylan's axe, but we don't really use Dylan very often, so those were just kind of in there for flavor, I guess. You heal at the end of each battle. Some battles have multiple waves to them and you don't heal in between that. Cards will have different indicators on them. You'll have symbols like shields, diamonds, and arrows to indicate stances. There are multi-arrows to indicate that a card damages more than one enemy. There's like green bars for how often you can use a card during a battle, stuff like that. There's also a badge system where your team can have up to 3 badges equipped, and they do things like add bonuses to damage or XP or other like fun status things. And you can find badges in the wild or do like little side quests with NPCs. You can find a lot of cards and things in the wild. They kind of glitter and it's pretty fun to find them all, because you're going to need to explore some of those levels a lot anyway. Max level for characters is 11 for some reason, meaning that there's a finite amount of grinding you can do even if you want to. Also, the skills you choose at each level are limited. Trying not to give anything away, but the boss chapter is a little rough. You have to go in team not having any clue how they will work together to beat the big bad all of a sudden. It's a long series of boss fights, and I kept dying on the final boss. And there's no breaks to recalibrate. You just die, and you start over at the beginning of the segment. And it's like 9 bosses in a row that you have to redo to get to that point. It took me 4 hours to get through that chapter, because I had to try the boss like 8 times to get there. That sucked. The voxel graphics are fucking gorgeous. If you're unfamiliar with Cocoa Cucumber's art style, it is like 3D, but it looks like chunky pixels. It's all done with voxels to allow the depth of picture. It's basically a bunch of 3D cubes or volumetric pixels, so it kind of looks like Lego art that's animated. It's really cool. The music was Stranger Synth, is the best way I can describe it. It's a little less poppy than the original game, but I liked that it was a little darker, fit the theme. Music changes a little based on the chapter you're in, like Anata's Noir definitely needed a different soundscape than like Jack in the Research Lab and stuff like that. So music was pretty fun. I liked the final boss music. I just didn't like the final boss fight. To sum up.
Yeah, you weren't too happy with that.
No, I was swearing a lot. Injury got to listen to me swearing a lot. Yeah, he's nodding his head over there. To sum up, I spent a lot of time in this game feeling like I wasn't sure where I was supposed to go next. I'm not sure if I wasn't reading carefully enough, or the rock behind the waterfall was just too obscured. There were no maps, no journals, just pay attention and or explore everything enough until you figure it out. NPCs rarely repeated themselves in a useful way, so if you missed something, you're kind of screwed. It felt like a long series of boss battles as far as combat was concerned, and the actual final boss, like I said, was really challenging in the absence of time to build team cohesion. And the story kind of felt disjointed and thin.
Damn, that's a bummer. This one, I had very high hopes for this one because I love Cocoa Cucumber, and it sounds like this one may have just come up a little short.
I still enjoyed most of my time with this game.
Well, it clocks in at $24.99. Give us your verdict on Echo Generation 2.
I think the price is good. The story doesn't make any more sense if you played the first game or not. Really, it's mostly a prequel, but you could play it without playing the first one. I think it's cool that there's a couple of like nods in there that if you played the original game and you're like, oh, that's that thing. That, oh, yeah, okay, so that's how that got there. Kind of stuff like that. That's cool. I think the game takes around 10 hours or so to get through the main story. I spent upwards of 14. I got frustrated with some of the mechanics, like that boss fight. So I'm going to give this a try. It wasn't a bad game. It just wasn't good enough to live up to my expectations of a sequel, prequel, for how much I enjoyed the first game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like the gameplay mechanic changes may not have been...
I think the gameplay was fine. I think the story was kind of what threw me. It didn't have as clear a story or as deep a story as I wanted.
If people are on the fence, it is part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So
go check it out on Game Pass. Yeah, definitely do that. If you enjoyed the first game, I mean, you might enjoy this one. It is a little different, though. Just fair warning.
All right, let's move on to Realm of Ink, developed by Leap Studio, published by 4Divinity, released May 25th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title for $24.99. From Ink and Brush, life springs anew. In Death's embrace, souls remain. Endless cycles, ceaseless rebirth. Aki, what is Realm of Ink?
Okay, so this is a roguelite. I'll never remember the difference between the two, so it's one of those two. Sorry.
Get roguelike over it. Is the genre. Roguelite is when it has elements of a roguelike.
Oh. Okay. So in this you play as a young woman and her weird animal companion thing. And you're going through to try and go back to the land of the living, basically, because you don't know how you ended up here, but by God, you're not supposed to be here, and you're gonna fix that shit. So throughout this, every run, you're finding a handful of different things while fighting rooms of enemies. It's very much like Hades and all those other most roguelikes, not all, but most of them. And some of the things you're finding here are relics, which you can hold two of, and they give you special abilities. Each one gives you a special attack, but they're also things that technically when you're equipping them to your little animal companion spirit thing friend, and it actually changes what that creature looks like, because at first it ends up looking like this giant black tadpole frog thing, like that section right between when it's just a tadpole and it's a full frog, so it still has the tail but otherwise it's a frog. It changes that when you equip two of them into a multitude of different creatures, and each of these items you also can level up by finding other relics and either replacing them with what you already have or just straight up destroying them, which gives you this blue energy that you can use at one of the upgrade stores during your run to make it stronger. And the more you level those up, the more changes happen to your little spirit companion as well, making its attacks stronger and stuff, because it also attacks enemies.
I saw a post on Reddit like last week of a 3-year old tadpole that never turned into a frog.
I didn't even know that was possible. Okay.
Yeah, it just like it hit the one point of growth and it just like kind of stopped. I'm going to see if I can find the picture of it.
Yeah, dude, because I want to see that, because that's weird. You're also finding silver, which you use to buy curios, which are equipment that you can add to yourself, and you can find multiple of the same one even if you do. But they can do anything from being like, oh yeah, you have a 5% chance of setting enemies on fire or making them bleed or poisoning them, or hey, if you buy this and you're at full health, all of your attacks now send out shockwaves to hit other enemies. Just a multitude of different things. You can also find those in different sections, because after you beat an area, you have a choice between two rooms, whichever one you want to go into next. So sometimes it'll tell you actually what's in that room. So it might say, oh, you get silver, or hey, here's a curio or a relic or an elixir, which is another thing you can find, which gives you other upgrades for your own character. Usually, this can make your light attack, you know, do 6% more damage and things like that. Those are, for me, those are super useful, because I don't really care about my animal companion or doing status effects all that much. And you're basically going through a whole bunch of levels, occasionally finding stores as well, until you hit a boss. And there's a whole bunch of different bosses. I think I fought five or six out of like 12 or so of them so far, and I've done 3 playthroughs so far, because it's all just randomized on what you get. Each one of them goes with a specific biome, so you're playing through a biome, getting to the boss, and then it basically gives you a teleportation thing, and you teleport to the next area, which is a brand new biome with a brand new boss. You play through a handful of these, and then you get to fight the Pine Book, or something like that, guy, who is apparently the one who controls all this realm, and you have to fight him and beat him. And then the fun thing happens. Everything rewinds. You get to see some of the character's past, and then it all rewinds, and you're basically given a brand new difficulty, and you're told, hey, yeah, go do it again. Anytime [S2] Nice. [S1] You fail or you complete it, you get brought back to this Fox Inn, which is run by a couple of fox spirits. And in here, you also have collected fox blood throughout your runs. And in here, you can use that to upgrade your character permanently for all future runs. And there's 3 different trees, basically, I guess I'll call them. They're not really trees, but they're all right next to each other, and they have lines where you have to put 1 point in all 3 of an item in a tree to unlock the next chunk, which is also 3. So you have to keep unlocking at least 1 level of everything to get to the next thing in each tree. Hence, it's not really much of a tree. And all of them can upgrade more than that, but 1 tree is just attacking for your character. So it's, you know, you do 3% more damage, you get status effects 3% more often, stuff like that. Another tree is for healing. So you might get like, oh, every time you enter a room, you get 2 hit points back. Or you get 2% healing. I don't know if that's a constant effect or not. I really hope it is, because I'm trying to spec into that. And then the last one is for like shops and stuff. So I've put a lot into that one. So you can get like discounts on all stores, and then discounts on specific stores to add on top of that. Getting more money, finding more of the various resources that you use for all the upgrades, things like that. Hence, that tree is godly. And then you just go again on the next difficulty, and every increasing difficulty, whilst increases how much damage enemies do, it also gives you better and better rewards. For instance, after the base difficulty, the next one makes everyone stronger, but it also gives you 25% more of the fox blood, which is what you use to upgrade all the different trees permanently. So
high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
Check in the meme section, by the way. You could see that tadpole.
Oh God, this is going to be horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Jesus, that thing's huge. That looks like a fish.
Yeah, that's a tadpole that didn't become a frog.
That's so weird looking. I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
It's smiling at you.
It's creepy.
The store page for this one has 4 uses of unique, so good job there.
Life.
The game clocks in at $24.99. Seems to be a pretty cool looking Asian styled Hades game. What is your overall thoughts on this at $25?
I'm really for it. I thought I was going to have a really tough time at this because I'm usually not good at these. This is actually not that bad. Matter of fact, our last show,
I got almost every achievement in the game during the last podcast.
So you're now beating this game. Bree's beaten Chroma.
I haven't beaten it yet because a lot of the achievements are actually for beating a full run on each of the subsequent difficulties, and I have not been able to do that quite yet. Because there's
am I the only one who comes here and just does the show?
Probably.
Yeah, fuck, probably.
I'm playing two different games right now, even. So.
Are you playing two games?
Because
way more efficient, duh.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes I play two games at the same time as well. I have three screens in front of me, why not?
Because you can only log in on one at a time?
Oh, I'm on Steam on one and on Xbox on the other.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
Yeah,
don't worry, Joe. I'm not doing anything like that.
No, you just never mind. Next game, Starfire Eternal Cycle, developed by Ethereal Fish Studio, published by eHome Entertainment, released April 23rd as an Xbox Play Anywhere title for $16.99. Starfire is a quick-to-pick-up, action-packed roguelite built for fast, satisfying gameplay, no steep learning curves, no overcomplicated systems. It combines the precision of side-scrolling action with the unpredictable build craft of roguelites, offering tight feedback, responsive movement, and random skill progression. Jacob, what is Starfire Eternal Cycle?
So Starfire is this, it's like a sci-fi roguelite beat-em-up. You are this woman who has no memory of the past. Earth has been devastated. But information about what has happened and, your past as well, like all that's fragmented. And you have to go from to all these different areas, by beating up all these animals robots and like mutants and like whatever they are. And they'll drop, various items. Sometimes it's equipment, other times it's these gems, which will have like a special power that you can have, I think starting you can have six, and then you can eventually pay to have more slots for that. And each of these like gems will have like different powers and like what they'll do, like what they'll affect and all that kind of stuff. And as you progress through by beating up obviously more and more levels of these aliens or mutants, whatever you want to call them, you will eventually start running into like mid bosses, and eventually there is a boss for the very end of it. Thankfully the game does let you decide what kind of path you're going to take. And so normally it's just, you're either going to go into a level where you're beating up and like the main thing is that you're receiving gems, or you could go for like a treasure hunt where you'll get equipment, or you could go for a coin one, and that's just going to drop currency that you can eventually spend in the store. And in the store you could buy other gems. You can also combine them there, which is super helpful because then your gems will have obviously greater power, and sometimes they'll mix together and be stronger because you're pulling in like three different gems at once. But yeah, the combat in this game, it's pretty awesome. It's very simple. You have your normal hit, you have a dash, you have like a heavy hit, which takes some time to charge, and then you have a rage hit, and that builds up as you're beating up and killing all of these robots and stuff. And as you're going through this, you'll eventually be picking up items and you'll be unlocking more of the story so you can find out what's going on to your character. But I will say this, the game, I'm just starting it, I'm now on the easy difficulty. That's what the game calls it. It's like any other roguelite. You're going to be dying quite a bit as you finally build up like the experience and like the permanent upgrades that you need to like kick the final boss's ass. And I still lose on the first boss sometimes, just because of my build. But I think what's also really cool is that you can choose which weapon you're going to use for your character. You can usually use like normal fists. There'll be some sort of elemental, like charge shot kind of thing, kind of like a Mega Man, like looking kind of thing. And the other one is a big fuck off hammer that you just get to swing around.
Big ass hammer.
Oh, it is. Honestly, it's my favorite. To get anything done with. And yeah, you just go like, you're just this tiny little girl swinging like this huge hammer and like just decimating everyone. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, beautiful. Like I'm having fun with it. Like, this is definitely going to stay on. Unlike other roguelites, like, because this is a beat 'em up, like, it is going to be like a two-handed game. So it's not like Vampire Survivors or Grind Survivors where you can just like, you know,
yeah, this is a normal game that takes two hands.
Hey, I mean, sometimes in the genre, you don't need that. So, anywho. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like, it's a lot of fun. And if you're a fan of either genre, I think you should check it out.
Aki, there's boobs on the cover.
She cares not.
You've caught my attention. What game is this?
Starfire Eternal Cycle. Did you click on the link and... in Twitch?
No, but I'm about when to.
We are live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 p.m. Eastern time usually. When people come and watch us. Yeah, see, boobs on the cover. I knew you'd like it.
Well, on top of that, she just has a cute face.
Yeah. $16.99 Starfire Eternal Cycle. Jacob, what is your verdict?
Yeah, buy it. That's a good price for it.
Cool. Next, Cottonville, developed and published by Red Deer Games. It released May 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $10.99. Welcome to Cottonville, a cozy dress-up and farming sim where creativity blossoms and fashion takes root. Get it, root. Run your own sewing atelier, grow essential crops, and craft stylish outfits for a charming cast of characters. Aki, what is Cottonville?
Okay, so in this, you come to this old building that no one wanted, so you just kind of took it over. And basically, it has a little farm right outside it, so you can grow plants of various types. And inside it has both a storefront and a place to make clothes. Woohoo! It has the ability to change various plants into different types of cloth. It has a dyeing facility, so you can change the colors of the cloth. And then it has a sewing machine, so you can make clothes. Awesome! It requires a whole bunch of stuff to make anything, and then you have to hope people actually want it. After you get yourself a whole bunch of clothes and stuff that you've made, you can open your store. Yay! People just poof into the store, and they all have requirements for what they want. And so usually it's like, oh, hey, there's this piece of clothing I want. And it'll show a picture of an icon. And it might be like a hat, or it might be... something that's, I guess, eco-friendly is what it's supposed to be, because it's a little plant. And they might have things like, I want something that has this type of cloth in it, and something that's this color. And you end up needing to give them multiple items to fit all three of those to get three stars to get the maximum amount of bonus money from them. They will pay for the full outfit at whole price, but then your bonuses are how many stars you get, so that you can hopefully actually go out and buy some things, because this game is pretty chillax, but it is very stingy with its money. It costs so much because you're not being like, okay, hey, yeah, I put seeds down, now I'm going to take this, and instead of just turning it into stuff, I'm going to make more seeds. No, can't do that. You have to go out and buy more seeds, and whilst they aren't expensive, anytime you have to buy like designs and stuff, those are extremely expensive. And there's only one place you can buy them, and they refresh every couple of days. I think it's like two or three in-game days. They'll change up what she has in store. And if you haven't bought everything, well, hopefully they appear again at some point, because you're SOL. And yeah, you're just taking those designs and making new outfits and seeing what you can get all together to try and minimize how much stuff you have to sell to people to hit all three of the things they want, so you can make as much bonus money without having to spend quite as much of your money. And yeah, there's, I think, 10 or 15 people that'll show up each day, and you're able to walk up to them, see what they want, and if you're like, I definitely can't make anything that has this item in it because I don't have anything that has that item in it, you can just tell them more or less to go away. And then they'll leave, and someone else will replace them in the shop because it only lets three people be in the shop at the same time. However, if you tell them to leave, they will leave, and that's still one of the people that you could have sold stuff to that day. And as I said, there's like 10 or 15, something like that, that you can do each day. So yeah, realistically, it's just a sit and farm things. Everything takes different amount of time to farm out, and then go buy a ton of seeds of everything and just stock up a ton, and then open your store every now and then and just sell out as much as you can, so that you can buy new designs, so you can make new outfits that will hopefully mean you don't have to make a ton of stuff for each person. Because there's been times when I've gone and given a person like, oh, they want these three things, okay, well, that's a full outfit because I don't have anything that has multiple of those things you want combined. Okay, that's great. Here's a hat, here's a shirt, here's some pants. Have fun! Thanks for taking three items instead of like one or two. That was nice of you. And yeah, other than that, that's really all it is. It's a very small map that you can run around, you can find some wildly growing items, but they don't give you as much as your farmed items. You get 9 of whatever item that you pick from your farm, but I think you get like 3 from wild ones. You can talk with the various people around town, but none of them really have anything of value to say.
Like my co-hosts.
Exactly. Only 2 of them are of any value, like your co-hosts. And that's because you can buy stuff from them. One allows you to buy various seeds and sometimes some actual plants, and the other one allows you to buy some fabrics as well as all the different designs. So, yeah. All the achievement lists, pretty easy for this. It's just really time consuming. It's like, oh, pick 100 different items, wild items, pick 100 farmed items, make 100 pieces of clothing, things like that. It's all very simple. It's just, it's going to take a while is all. So yeah, it's
nice, not hard, cute. Just like time consuming.
Exactly.
Well, it is not an expensive game. You're talking about the game being stingy with money. You don't have to be stingy with this one. It's only $11. What are your thoughts on Cottonville at $10.99?
If you like farming games, but you aren't one of those people who are like super, super into it, this was a good point for you. This is really good for kids. For adults, I just don't think there's enough here. For an adult, realistically speaking. But clearly it's not made for adults, so yay.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you have kids and they like this kind of stuff, 100% worth buying it. If you don't, maybe try it if it goes on sale or something.
Speaking of sales, this is... I know we're more Xbox people, but the Switch version of this game... And most Red Deer games in general on the Switch usually get really steep discounts. You can get this until the 1st, so until Monday, for $2 on the Switch.
Woohoo!
$1.99.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, there you go. If you want to save money, just keep an eye on Red Deer games on the Switch. They do great sales. So, if you're looking for some cheap games, I know them. Who is it? No Gravity... who else, Jacob? I know you keep track of these things.
I know there's a company that gives out free games for like a week.
I think that's No Gravity.
That's No Gravity. Okay. Yeah, they just finished another week of games.
Yeah, usually they do like 12 days of Christmas kind of thing.
Okay.
Qbyte would do cheap stuff. But all right, let's move on. Next game, Driftland, the Magic Revival, developed by Star Drifters, published by Ultimate Games, released May 22nd on Xbox Series X and S, June 12th on PS5, 1999. You take on the role of a mage overlord with your own castle, tower, and a small realm on one of the land masses. With your unique powers, you can explore a procedurally generated world and connect floating lands to expand your kingdom. Jacob, what is going on in Driftland?
That's a good question. In fact, if you're going to play this game on Xbox, I'd recommend a mouse. Because with the controller, this is...
What? You gotta remember that your mic doesn't like stuff like that.
Whatever. It's slow. Like Heinz
slow.
Ketchup.
Slow. There, I could do it because my mic picks up everything. And yes, it does support console, keyboard, and mouse on the Xbox store page, so that's a thumbs up.
So you're going to need it. And this game tries to like kind of tries to like mix RTS with like a management sim. And you're going to be doing this by building a bunch of stuff in the land that you're given. And then, you're going to, decrease the fog of war a little bit by having your people go out and, like, explore. There's going to be a couple of monsters, and you're going to be able to take them out with without too much trouble. And then you gather the lands. And then you do it all over again. And again. And again. Holy crap. Like, the GUI for this game,
microscopic?
Not only is it microscopic, but in the settings, apparently you can mess with it to make it bigger. Never worked for me. And on top of it, it's just everything is practically unreadable. Oh, yes, like the tutorial, which only shows up in a tiny little window in the upper right-hand corner of the screen. And you have to, like, manually move your cursor over to it just so you can select it and hopefully X out of it so you can figure out what exactly you need to be doing next. Because all that shows up is the text. If it's like, oh, you need to go over to the well, it doesn't show you what the well is going to look like. Like, it doesn't show you, like, where the trees are. You fuck off, bitch. You got to find that shit yourself.
Dude, I'm looking at screenshots on the Xbox page. I cannot read the font on these.
No. Like, it is ridiculous. This is a PC game. It's like 2-point
font.
Yeah. This is a PC game that got ported to Xbox for reasons that I don't know.
Money?
But, to like...
sell, people to play?
Yeah, but, like, there is some major work that needs to get put into this to make this, like, actually playable for people. Like...
What kind of improvements would we do to this? Obviously, improve the size of the
UI. Like, honestly, cursor sensitivity needs to really be worked on. The UI. There's easier ways to go about this kind of stuff on a console RTS kind of setup, whether it's like wheels or... hell, just less complicated menus, but like it's just
I do like the concept of this game of like going from island to island, taking over, and it feels very Risk-ish
of like it's neat, but like honestly it wears itself out pretty quick, and I don't know if that was fatigue. I mean, to be fair, that might have been fatigue from just like Jesus Christ, this is taking like forever for me to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing and going and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, I felt like I was just like, I'm done. Good.
That like, looks like a tough one to get into, but it seems like it could be rewarding if you can read it.
Honestly, like if anything, I'd say go try it out on PC. Like,
unfortunately, this one is not playing anywhere.
I know that this is like, you know, we're supposed to be pushing the Xbox version. I don't know that I could, you know, really recommend it in this state. Like, yeah. If there's work done on it, then I'd be happy to take another look at it. But in its current state, I'm just like, nah.
I also think Ultimate Games should look into Play Anywhere for some of these titles, because I think having a native Windows PC version, Windows Store PC version, Xbox PC, whatever the fuck you want to call it, having a native version that you could carry over between the console and PC, I think would be amazing for a game like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, seems like readability and ease of use is holding this one back. If you are on the fence, we will have giveaway codes thanks to the fine folks at Ultimate Games. We'll be doing that in the coming weeks. Coming shows, not sure when. We got a couple of things we got to give away in the coming weeks. This one clocks in at $20 on Xbox. What are your thoughts?
In its current state, no.
That's fair.
Sorry, this is a deny it. Like, if it gets worked on, as I said, I'd be happy to take another look, but in current state, no way.
That's fair. Increase the UI size, folks. We need to be able to read these things. I have a 55-inch TV, and I can't read screenshots on my Xbox store. That is small font.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Next up, NERD, developed and published by Forever Entertainment, released May 29th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, $7.99. In a cruel twist of fate, everything you know is torn apart, your significant other is kidnapped, and you're next. Well, that's kind of handy, because you'll know where she is. You'll be with her. Trapped by a masked maniac, you must fight to survive by solving intricate puzzles and navigating deadly rooms filled with traps. Uncover buried secrets, piece together the truth, and confront a past that refuses to stay hidden. Will you escape or become part of the nightmare? Bree, what is NERD?
This is an FMV game mixed with an escape room concept. It's also kind of point-and-click puzzle game in its execution. Basically, you have scenes that are video of the characters in the beginning, and then there are point-and-click scenes that are built out of video, and you have a first-person view of, like, hands reaching for objects in puzzles, and then the puzzle itself you can interact with. The story is that you, Adam, show up at a restaurant to meet your wife, significant other, whatever, who reminds you, insensitive shithead husband that you are, that it's your 10th anniversary. You tell your wife that you basically don't care, so she leaves, and you decide to call her and check on her and realize she's been abducted, and you wander out to look for her and get help, and you get abducted yourself and awake in a coffin with your phone missing a SIM card. You have a lighter and a post-it note indicating the code to get out is your anniversary date. And if you weren't paying attention, you're screwed. Yeah. So you try to escape the room and get gassed and find yourself in another room with a masked guy on a TV giving you instructions about the game you are now part of. The masked captor gives you three rules. Use your brain, not your muscles. Like, don't wreck his room. Don't call for help. And hurry up, time matters. There's poison gas filling the room. Yay. It turns out our captor has been planning this for a long time. Following you, stalking your wife, who you were totally cheating on, by the way. And this captor knows, like, dates and times of important things in your life and her life, and has set up an elaborate series of puzzles you have to navigate surrounding the details you should know about your relationship. It's a cool horror premise. So we have a room in front of us with a bunch of obtuse clues scattered about. There's a couple of shelves, a computer, a fridge, a couch, a TV. The TV is both a puzzle mechanic and our primary way to talk to our captor. When we succeed at a puzzle, we get a Scrabble tile. On the coffee table is a Scrabble table or board or whatever that we need to spell something on.
I kind of want to throw out there, Scrabble's a trademark. I don't think they could do that.
Yeah, I
it should be like Scorble directly or something.
Yeah. But yeah, so we have to make a word using the letters we found, and that takes us on to the next section, and we have to spell different words in different sections. If you guess too much, the captor will kill you, or the puzzle itself will kill you by zapping you to death or something. So you need to do like you have to, like, not guess the puzzles. You can brute force it, but it's annoying if you try to. You'll need to do a musical puzzle where H is on the keyboard as a note, because H is not a... No. It, what? The game's not in English. So there were some translation errors. Yeah. So you'll need to read subtitles. There are some language spelling errors, like the wife's name is spelled differently in the same scene. Despite that, most of the clues were represented visually or in English, so I was able to understand most of it.
It's in Polish. Interesting.
Yes, yes. The audio for this was interesting. There's a loop, and it kind of plays and goes from mystery background music to ticking clocks. There's a section with heavy breathing, and there's a super intense "you're gonna die soon if you don't do something" track, and they're all pretty short and don't feel particularly related to any one thing you're doing. They just sort of keep looping. Yeah. There are some gameplay settings that I appreciated, like adjusting the cursor sensitivity, turning off the time pressure so you could take the time to read and make choices, especially given the language barrier, and adding bigger subtitles is also an option. But I felt like the subtitles and everything were done pretty well. So some good stuff about this. It was interesting to have an FMV presentation for an escape room game. I thought that was cool. Thankfully, you can skip video of Adam's hands reaching out player unlocking a door like he's time in his life for the upteenth time. I don't understand. Every time you go, you have to go through the same animation. So the good thing is that you can press the skip button, but like some of these little hands reaching out videos are just comical. That kind of took me out of the immersion of it or whatever. Some not so good stuff. Puzzles were not easy to find answers to. The clues were all over the place. And I don't mean that as much physically as I do, like, mentally trying to puzzle it out was a little rough. Sometimes you'd have to check your inventory. Sometimes you'd have to interact with things in the room. I feel like I sometimes brute force puzzle answers and couldn't figure out why that was the answer, even reverse engineering it, and that's a problem. The cursor was finicky and sometimes hard to get button presses where and when you needed them. Sadly, I got hardcore stuck in a puzzle and could not get to the ending of the game. And puzzles.
You broke up there. You what?
I'm not bad at puzzles. So the fact that I got hardcore stuck, you know, kind of was rough.
That's pretty shocking because you're the smart one on the show.
Aw, thanks.
Well, Jacob's kind of smart too, but you know, I'm not going to give him credit on the show.
In their own way. Everybody's smart in their own ways.
Except me.
What?
So, anything else to say about Nerd, or should we talk price?
No, let's talk price.
All right, clock's in at $7.99. What do you think of it?
I'm going to give this a try. I feel like some of the concepts in this escape room scenario were actually too obscure. Given more time, I might be able to finish the last letter of the word I was spelling and complete the game. But it's a good concept. I could just be missing something obvious. It happens from time to time. But it felt like it was a real stretch to find some of these clues. And that was unfortunate.
You could be puzzled out, too, because you've been...
I did hardcore some Chroma Zero, and that's a different mindset, though. I don't know.
Plus, you had Mist and Ribbon, plus Echo Generation. Oh, yeah. Like,
yeah.
You've had some brain work lately.
I have put in some brain work, for sure.
All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is Arcade Archives 2 Tag Team Wrestling. Developed and published by Hamster, released May 21st, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $9.99. Tag Team Wrestling is an action game released by Technos Japan in 1983. Enjoy the world of professional wrestling as you control the hero wrestler and aim to become world champion. Quick move selection and the skillful tag team work unique to tag matches are the keys to victory. Sometimes brawls spill out of the ring and unexpected intruders might even show up. Jacob, what is going on in Tag Team Wrestling?
That is a great question. Because Tag Team Wrestling... this might be the first, like, actual wrestling video game. I mean, with your knowledge, can you confirm that?
I don't know. I'll have to find out. I have to look into that. List of wrestling games. Let's see.
This is a game that you have to keep in mind. This was made back in 1983. And it controls like it's from 1983. You play as like a professional wrestling tag team. And you have to defeat other teams known as the heel team. And you have to face one round against each of them. And pretty much you just have to win. Like if it ends in a tie or the heel team wins, then you've lost the game. Now for me, I was having a hard time figuring out how exactly it works. Because really there's only one, I mean, you have your joystick and there's one button. Now from what I've read, apparently there's supposed to be some sort of menu that pops down, when you're holding an action thing. I don't recall ever seeing it, so I'm not sure how that feature works, but I had a heck of a time trying to actually get anything done in this game. I have yet to win. I have thrown my opponent out of the ring and won one round that way, which I'm not going to lie. That was pretty cool. But I was just like, oh shit. Like you could do this in this game.
I think this is the very first wrestling game. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page. All the promotion ones are late 80s, early 90s at the earliest. And then Brandless, the number one is tag team wrestling in 83. Apu is in 84, and then Championship Pro Wrestling is 85. So there you go.
So this very likely was the first.
Yeah. The first or among the very first.
Yeah. Like I'm not gonna it's rough. It's interesting though, and I'm glad that like I got to play this. Because, I mean, obviously it has its spot in video gaming, not only video gaming, but also sports video games.
Dude, pop culture history. The NES version of this game, the one team was the Strong Bads.
That's true,
yes.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. And in the arcade version, the bad guys are just called the heel team. I love that.
I mean, that's what I called. Oh, right. No, like I actually called them the heel team. Like that's how they're introduced in the game. But
yeah, because they're the bad guys. The bad guys are the heels,
right?
Face and heel. Well, some people might not know that in wrestling.
I mean,
faces are the good guys. Heels are the bad guys. So
I didn't know that.
See, learning experience.
And now you know.
Yep.
Oh,
anything else to say about tag team wrestling?
I think it's one to definitely check out and buy. Like it's an interesting title. Like I want to like give some more time with this one just because I'm curious if I was doing something wrong. Like it's not one of my favorites obviously, but it's real interesting and I'm glad that that Hamster brought this to back to everyone.
Yeah. You could always give an update next week cuz next week we're going to have two Arcade Archives games to talk about. That's right. Not only are we getting the new release Ace Driver, which is a Bandai Namco game, they are re-releasing Tateke Big Fighter from Arcade Archives 1 into the Arcade Archives 2 program. So we might see a bunch of the older games re-released. And I would be very excited if that's the case, because Jackal is on the menu, boys. Unfortunately, still no word on console archives coming to Xbox. So, Hamster, please. Please. Pleasey, please.
Please?
Please. Please. Even on Facebook, I'm like, please bring to Xbox.
I like a few of those.
Please. I'm asking nicely, Hamster, please. I want cool borders on Xbox. That is it for this show. We made it through. Big thanks to Evan coming on, Ecores, chatting with us about Chroma Zero. Bree, good show. Good job running things, handling the interview. Hockey, Jacob, you were here.
Yeah, I was.
Damn right I was.
Love it. Music. I don't know what I'm going to play. How's that? How you like that? I'm going to see if I can get the soundtrack for Chroma Zero.
Do it.
And maybe play some of that. So if not, we'll play something else. So it's a secret to everybody. We'll find out on Saturday when I'm editing. Does anyone have any final words to wrap this up?
Dildos and buttholes.
I mean, you at least said something, so I'll take it.
Yeah, he would take a dildo up the butthole. Loser.